I'm always happy with everybody who shows up, so I've kind of arranged the room this evening in kind of a circle, partly because archaeologically we know that that's the way lots of people around the world have arranged themselves. Interestingly, the church that we belong to in Salt Lake, from whence I just came, is built in a circle, and I like it. It's a good way to, it's not the kind of church I grew up in, but you know, like, but the hope is that we can feel like we're together in this, and that I can talk and you can talk and you can write and I can write and we can interchange and you can talk to her and so on back and forth. I probably will need to take many drinks of water during this. I'm just a thirsty guy today. Can't get enough of it. So come on in. So I've got some writing utensils and some writing pads, and I'm happy to pass those out. And why don't I do just that? In case you either, low impact session. You do not have to write creatively, and if you do, you don't have to read it out loud if you don't want to. Okay? So nothing could be more seamless or harmless in terms of expectations, because I don't really have that many. I'll pass these around. Well, maybe you have a utensil that you like better. There are some different kinds of paper. There's wide line, narrow line, and small. And I just think the different people like different kinds of paper, so I'll just pass that around and you take the kind you like. And take some home for the kids. Okay. Now, my experience has been in arts and in teaching arts and in performing and selling the arts that I've made. Mostly, recently, I've been writing. By that, I mean the last dozen years or so. But I also have a background in graphic arts, in theater arts, and some in music. I taught in Houston for a short time. I taught in Hong Kong for 7 years. Came back to the States and fulfilled that dream to just write for a year, which essentially means spending the bank account and not interchanging with anybody, and in my case, writing rather badly for about a year. And then I was the poet in residence for Wichita, Kansas, and their school district, and then I was a literary arts coordinator for the Utah Arts Council, where I helped writers connect with publishers and audiences. So I'm happy and fairly freewheeling talking about writing as one of the arts, and I have some grasp of many of the arts. So that's why I say if this session goes ahead and extends into just sort of creativity in general, and the philosophy of it, it need not stick to poetics or creative writing at all. It can be as broadly aesthetic as we care to get into. A lot of what happens will depend on who you are and how you react and so on. Of course, I have some things in mind, but I don't have to follow them. I told Audrey that earlier, and I thought she was going to fall over. She was in a session or two last week and said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "Well, I said about four things, but I don't have to do that." One of the things that I like to begin a class session with is just to read something. And I won't read something of mine right now. I'm going to read something by a man I know. Just to kind of start us off by hearing good words, words that are composed and words that are art language. I mean by that, they're normal words, but by their positioning and so on, it's elevated language now. And I do that because I talk, in sort of mundane and didactic and, you know, not that fabulously interesting ways. And I think it's good for us to right away hear some composed language. See if there's anything I need to scan for you on this. Well, I won't do a gloss on it. I'll just read it. And then I'll tell you something about the poem and the poet later. This is by Kenneth W. Brewer, originally from Indiana, later of New Mexico. Went to undergraduate school on a football scholarship. Has been a professor for many years in Logan, Utah, and a widely published poet and writer. This is called Concession. I am a man with a woman in me. We do not get along. I feel her nagging in the bones of my hands. I treat her terribly. Possess, use her like a slave. I let her admire me in the bathroom mirror, then try to leave her there. But she stays with me, the way ice builds inside of windows. She tricks me into womanish gestures, capricious moods, a coquettish hand wave I despise, tears at funerals and movies, constant dieting and undieting. My eyelashes and soft skin have been hers from birth. My voice troubled me until I realized I am a man with a woman in me. To get even, I refuse to let her do what she wants. No squash blossom jewelry, no ballet lessons, no cooking that takes over 10 minutes. I will not let her show as much affection as she would like. She cannot talk to strangers. She cannot even talk to me. I will not love her, and she will not leave. So I make concessions, an occasional moment when I'm alone, and I give her my dreams to live in. Now, that's a handsome and big poem that I think is going to last a long time. I think it's a very brave poem to have written, and then beyond that, it's a very brave poem to have published. Ken is a strapping fellow. I've been married a couple of times. Has a couple of kids. Is a hunter of pheasants and other birds. Has a couple of huge bird dogs that he has trained masterfully. Drives a pickup truck. Has a keen eye for haberdashery when he wants to. He's also colorblind, so he has to have two closets, one with brown clothes and one with blue clothes, with separate laundry baskets, so he doesn't, because he has no idea what he's putting on in the morning. But his daughter helped him sort his closets. And so this is not a poem about somebody whose sexual orientation is in question for them. It's not somebody who, was bullied as a boy and so wrote this poem. It's not about somebody who's sissified, was sissified in adolescence or anything. But it is talking about anima and animus, that quality that each of us has, wherein we are masculine and feminine, depending on what we need to be at the time and what's been brought out in us and so on. And I think that's about all that's necessary to say about it. It's a fairly straightforward theme. It's so straightforward that it kind of hurts to hear it. I have heard him read it many times. I myself have read it around many times. And there's always a spot or two in it where you can hear people catch their breath. I think that's because it's so genuine. It's very authentic. It's obviously in the contemporary mode, very contemporary piece, very modern. And is also, I should say, in the confessional vein. And I mean by that the poetic criticism term confessional, Robert Lowell, Anne Sexton, Sylvia Plath, and so on, were strong confessional poets. This is maybe one of the most likable confessional poems I know, actually. That as a movement is not much with us now. People don't publish large books of confessional poetry, and they don't read them in public as much as they once did. And it's not something that, but it's a thing that was gone through in the 50s, 60s, maybe as late as the early, late 40s. And it lasted maybe 15 or 20 years. But I think the directness of this speaks to us, regardless of what we want to call it. Now, I'm sickened by hearing my own voice. Do you have any responses to this? You don't have to, but if you do, or remarks, questions, or... We're not going to study this all night, I'm just saying.
Do the people giving the gender sessions know of this poem?
I don't know.
Should show it to them.
They probably, yeah, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to those sessions yet.
I went to one.
Didn't get a chance to go to any of them.
That's right.
Yeah, I think they're doing remarkable stuff. Yeah. Any other remarks or what would you say, Lon?
Yeah, as a woman, I was doing a little dance inside there while you were reading that. I was thinking, that's cool.
Yeah.
That guy's really strong.
Oh, he's come to a lot of, yeah, I think so. I think the speaker in this has come to a lot of grips with, you know, stuff that's not always that easily wrestled with.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not that easily articulated. Well, I'm not saying it was easy for him to articulate this, but I am saying...
Check random, or left brain, right brain. Here's the normal spectrum, and I'm, you know, way out there somewhere. And I can really identify with that poem an awful lot. In fact, I think I've written something like that, where it cyst over it. Or you can just go...
Well, I think we're probably coming to a time, not to overanalyze this other component in me, that is a part of my makeup and that drives who I am, that helps me make decisions or gets in the way of my making decisions or, you know, all the different things that are components of a person's life, just the different configurations. Now, I chose this one not simply because it's stark and lovely and forthright and honest and authentic poem, but also to sort of introduce the notion of, you know, why would anybody want to write poems anyway? I think that's a valid question to kind of ask in America. You know, why would anybody want to write expressively, whether it would be poems or personal essays or, you know, anything? Isn't it rather passé? I mean, aren't we past poems? I mean, aren't they sort of 19th century and before? I'm playing devil's advocate here, but... You know, lots of people get along just fine without any poems and other modes of expressive writing. And for that matter, lots of people get along quite well without reading anything.
Do they?
Well, I guess they do. I don't know. I recall that saying, and I want to say it was by Mark Twain. I think it might have been, but so much is ascribed to him that I won't stand on that. But wasn't he the one that said... the man who does not read anything has no advantage over the man who cannot read anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how people exist without books and so on, but then I don't know how people exist without an expressive mode. I wouldn't be able to. What do I mean by that, expressive mode? I mean a way in which, not for the sake of ego gratification, not for the sake of getting something published, not for the sake of hearing applause, not for the sake of having a painting in the gallery on the wall, but I mean a genuinely expressive mode, be that journal or any of the other kinds of writing that I've mentioned, or anything else, photography or clay or the saxophone or a Hohner harmonica or anything. I'm going to assume that you probably kind of all have some expressive modes. And I'll just say plainly so that, you know, before I ask anything, I'll say who I am. I think we all should investigate and see what expressive modes are ours and which ones we can have and operate in often or daily or when the need arises or in times of crisis and cruelty or in times of jubilation or... You know, so that's where I am with it. I think everybody has them, and everybody needs them, and everybody ought to foster them and identify them and operate in them. What do you think?
I use poetry.
You use poetry.
And it's been at times of celebrating other people who are very special to me.
Mm-hmm.
Get together for a boss that I really appreciated, and a graduation from a doctoral program of a dear, dear friend, found out that her name was a name I had never heard before, because she was never called by that, but it had to be on the program. I'd just come back from the graduation ceremony, and we were at a dinner for her. And she had put together this dinner for friends, and so there was no program. And the evening was going, and nobody was saying anything, and there was nothing going on. And I thought, this is such a dear person, can't just not say anything. So I got a napkin, and I started out my friend whose name I did not know. And then I used juxtaposition, and it just came. And so I got real bold, and I stood up, and I said, I think we need to mark this occasion in some special way. And I'd written something, and I just wanted to say it. And so I said it, and then it prompted others to stand up and, you know, say some things. And it turned out to be a really lovely time.
I'm glad you had that time. And it's reminding me that last week, the week before, there was a woman who was who began a poem in a session here, and then decided that she would keep going on that. She worked on it the whole of the week, and it was for her parents' 60th wedding anniversary or something. And boy, was it a dandy poem. I'll tell you what it had to do with. It had to do with her remembering growing up in a mom-and-pop grocery store, where they had the grocery store, and then there was a little hallway, and then they lived behind it. So her mom, dad worked there, she worked there, her brother worked there, there were a couple of hired guys that worked there, you know, when necessary, and so on. And it was just loaded with, you know, imagery, memories. The fresh fish coming in from Seattle, you know, and the people who had signed up to pick it up on Monday and Wednesday, you know. The berries, sorting out the fruit, you know, and getting rid of the bad, and putting the, you know, yesterday's fruit on top and the new fruit on the bottom, you know, all that kind of stuff. The sound of the cash register, two sounds the cash register made. The look of the cash register, the brass of the cash register, the wooden floors, you know, just bleached to bones, you know, so and so on and so on. It was a mighty fine piece. And that was her expressing, that's what I mean by expressive, that was her expressing, you know, out of a memory, you know, something, and then deciding this has an occasion for it, like you're talking about. You know, this is something, my folks' wedding anniversary is coming up in 3 or 4 months or something. And I think her last intention was to take a portion of it and frame it, and then to make the rest of it into a little booklet, kind of, or something, you know. And so I think that that's one really legitimate function of, you know, expressive writing, painting, whatever. In my family, the family that I came from, I'm the oldest of three boys. My mother's a painter and photographer. My brothers do many different kinds of arts. My dad does some drawing. And that's what we tend to give one another at occasions, is art of some kind. You tend to do it, it's make it yourself, you know, do it yourself time. Hallmark doesn't make a lot of money off of us. We make the card, and we make the present, we make the wrapping paper, and, you know, so on. So I grew up that way. And when we couldn't afford wrapping paper, then we would use takeout.
Funny pages.
Pardon?
Funny pages.
Well, yeah, use the funny pages. We used to take and scissor out, you had to ask mom or dad, and scissor out color pictures from National Geographic, and then you know, glue them all together and stuff and make a piece of wrapping paper and go with that. But anyway, that's, you know, to me, that's a really natural thing, because it's, I mean, it's not a stretch for me. That's just, you know, how it's done. Now, I'd like to, just for a moment, to kind of turn to the pads and just kind of give you a little sampler of some writing, because we've been talking, we've been listening, and I would like us to do a little writing now to get the feel of that. Talking about writing is fine, and writing is better when we're talking about, you know, how to absorb what the notion of writing is. And I'm just going to give you a little formula that I use when I'm not kidding you about this stuff. This is just what I do when I try to write. The first thing I do is try to warm up. Okay, and so we'll just do a little 60-second thing, which I will time, and we'll just warm up. And I'll tell you about that in a moment. And then what I try to do is write. And that's all. Just write. Not edit. And when that little voice comes in, like, oh, would anybody understand this, or would they get it, or, you know, that kind of stuff, ignore it. Choke that little voice, you know, and I just keep writing. So warm up, write, and then very distinct from that, fix up. And that's when I let that little voice start talking. Okay. So as a warm-up, I'm just going to pick a favorite word and pitch it at you. And would you please respond to it on the page? As I say, you don't have to share this with anybody or any of that kind of stuff. This is for you. You can take it home. You can burn it if you want to, but only where the fire chief says. So what this just comes from the fact that I have lots and lots of favorite words. Okay. Just where I'm sitting right now, this is one that comes up for me often, so I'll use it. Just jot down, this can be sentences, fragments, phrases, it can be a list, word association, anything you want. And I should get something here because I like to do this at the same time. Okay, plain, common, garden variety word. The word is wooden. W-O-O-D-E-N. Go. Stop. Okay. I'm not even sure what I wrote because I had neither pair of glasses on that day, so. Okay, so I'll go first, and I may be the only one, and I recognize that, and that's just fine. Mine came out this time mostly as a list, but a couple of kind of related things, and so I'll just go down through it. Stairs, banisters, barber pole, rickshaw, chopsticks, newel post, oars, dock, loose boards, step through, decoys, pencils, Indian, as in wooden Indian, cigar store Indian, cupboard, floorboards, truck beds. So that's all I have. Anybody else mind pitching in?
Were these words that were supposed to be associated with wooden or things that were wooden?
Whatever.
I don't think you can go wrong with this one.
That's fine.
Please.
I'm not satisfied with it, but I'm just cooperating.
Thank you.
I didn't bring my glasses. Is anyone farsighted here?
I've got three pairs of glasses with me. I don't know if any of them will, if any of them will work. Let's see. Now these are my bifocals, which I didn't like, so I switched back. And then these ones that I'm wearing might do. And then these are my reading glasses. That one's not a good one.
Okay. Because no one will know it unless I read it.
This is better.
I'm so glad.
All right. Wooden, so long ago, plastics. Warm glow of wood, life within. Wooden, plastics, oh no, families by the fire, plastics, where has life gone?
Bingo. Loads of stuff. One word, you know, is that something? I'm like an auctioneer, you give me the slightest signal, I'll sell you the boat. So.
Why do I act so wooden, not bendable at all, as if I'd break? If I relaxed, I'd not be here at all.
Yeah, starting with a question. Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done that before. I should do that. That'd be a good idea. Anybody else? Please.
Wooden shoe that I remembered from my childhood, an advertisement, enjoy wooden shoe beer. Wouldn't you enjoy beer? Wooden words on wood fiber paper, led by the lead in a wooden pencil.
There you go.
So you and I both have a wooden pencil. Wooden pencil in mind. Anybody else? Jim?
I just saw a picture working at a lumber yard, so I envision a lot of things that come out.
Oh, well, this was too easy for you.
Well, no, because I was really amazed how I ended up with, because it went almost back to the Garden of Eden with it.
Ah.
Golden, lit, smooth, broken, unbroken, lined, emotive, strong, built, rich, open, clean, God, held, sustained, upheld, clothed, leafless.
Look at the way our mind works. One thing goes to another thing. By the time you get five words away, you can't figure it out if you hadn't gotten all those words in between. But my gosh, you know, it's just a wealth of stuff in there. Now, Jim, if I were to say to you, write me a two-page personal essay or write me a poem, and making sure you get all those words in it, you'd be real curious to see what you came up with, because it's
really
rich
easy
words.
To do. I'm already almost writing it again.
There's that mind that's way over here, and
see,
he's off.
What you said about, I was here last week, but what you said about that warm-up thing, I didn't quite catch that. I'm so glad I came tonight, because I can see where I've got a lot of stuff ready to unlock.
Oh,
that warm-up is just going to, I'm going to take some cushion and then go build a list and then write it.
It's as easy as just recognizing when people talk or when you stray across something. Some of my favorite words are just instruments. I've written many poems having to do with the piano. Do I play the piano? No. Huh. But I love pianos, and I've always been around pianos. And I worked in churches when I was a kid. Every Sunday school room has a piano. I worked as a janitor at a church, school pianos. I went to a one-room schoolhouse. The teacher was the piano teacher, and she was not very good either, but she did her best, et cetera, et cetera. Banjo is a favorite word of mine. Mustache, I think, is just an absolutely silly-sounding word, you know, but a terrific word. You know, you can say it to little kids, and they all go nuts, you know. Umbrella, you know. What a curious word that is. Just the sound of it, you know. And then the associations, my gosh, it's everything from Julie Andrews to the umbrellas of Gerberg to Englishman to Madison Avenue to, you know, blah, 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 you know. Japanese umbrellas, paper umbrellas, little umbrellas on silly-sounding drinks that I don't know the names of, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know. So just a single word, you know, and I think... My guess is that you probably wouldn't be here if you weren't already this way about words. Probably would have chosen to do something else this evening. But there's a bunch of people who just enjoy wording and wordness and just the heft of the language, you know, and the release of the language. I don't want to keep preaching. Did you have something?
Mm-hmm. Plank-like people. Stiff trees that never before have bent, now doubled over from pain, not sobbing, but still sobbing, unseen and unheard.
Oh. Bunch of pictures in there. Thank you. Well, your Spanish name is Daisy, but your American name is?
Marguerite.
Marguerite, that would be different. Thank you, Marguerite. Audrey, you got some?
Wooden horse splinters, rough to touch, floors, beams, bridge held up with wooden trusses, new smell, old dark pine paneling painted white, shingles.
I'm not sure where else. Oh, well, yeah, one never knows where they come from, but they're all in there. And somebody said something that made me remember wooden spools that thread used to come on that you can't find anymore. I wish I had all of those that we had around the house. You know, they're probably worth something to somebody. And we took them for granted like we did every other darn thing that was around there, and you know, now they're antiques. But what do they come on? Are they on plastic, or
plastic?
Yeah. Plastic, or they were on paper or cardboard for a while, I don't know. But they used to be wooden. Think of that. We used to be so wealthy in our thinking about wood that we used to use it for thread, you know, and it cost what? A nickel or a dime. It's amazing. Well, and again, this shows us that that one thing goes to another. It also shows us that we have leaps of association, is what I mean by that phrase. It also shows us that there's a wealth of stuff in there, that something as simple as one word can trigger us, that something as simple as one memory can trigger us. So when somebody says to me, I've got writer's block, I don't know what they're talking about. I just plain don't. Now, I can write badly for a year, But I can't not write. One of my favorite poets, William Stafford, once said, if you don't like your writing, lower your standards. I think that's kind of true, you know. I say, well, I don't like this, so I'm just going to kind of take it down a notch and see what it'll do. You know, it's what I can do today, right now, so on. Okay, so that's an example of a warm-up. You can do warm-ups by just listening to the room. You can do warm-ups by just, I don't want to put a fine point on it and call it meditating, but just kind of getting quiet, you know, and just take 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and getting quiet, and then letting yourself write, just drift, you know, so on. There are many ways to warm up. Now, an example of a writing thing, and I'll just give you a starter on this, and I don't know why, but I was just walking across the street with my coffee a while ago and thought this way. Would you please write down the phrase, that first day back from Canada? Now, I think we can afford 2 minutes on this one. I'll be generous. And you can think of this as kind of sentences and phrases and so on. I don't care if you've never been to Canada. Make it somebody else. You know, if you don't want to say, that first day back from Canada, I found my dog dead in the driveway, you know, give the dog to Bill, you know. That first day back from Canada, Bill found his dog dead in the driveway, you know. And see what happens. Why did that phrase? I have no idea why that phrase came to me, but I think it has, you know, some possibilities for a starter. And one of the things that I'm trying to get to in this kind of opener for a piece of, you know, the writing part is, you know, in this expressive mode, there are facts, and there's fiction, you know, and there's, and it's all acceptable. You know, we are not journalists here. This is not our diary. Okay, we don't have to just stick to the facts like Joe Friday. So, make it. If the thing wants to go silly, go silly. You know, if it wants to go mysterious, go mysterious. If it wants to go poignant, go poignant. You know, but make yourself continue to write, and every time you find yourself stopped, make yourself start and go. Okay, do you kind of understand what I'm suggesting here? I think so. Okay.
We don't have to deal with that dead dog, do we?
No. Skip the dead dog. Sorry, I shouldn't have led you around that corner. Ooh. I don't know why that got said either. Okay, now just let me get my paper ready. I'm going to have to get a different pencil because this is going to... Okay, now this thing's got a tiny little second hand on it, so... some more things in there too. All right, why don't you have a look at it and some way for your own, so that you'll know what it is later, circle a word or a phrase or mark a few places that seem to you to be promising. You know, if there's some really far gone handwriting, you might want to shape that up a little bit. Like I see some here that I'm never going to be able to figure out. Okay. Yeah, if there's something that just looks, you know, thoroughly useless, you might just draw a straight line through it. You may decide later it's quite useful, so don't obliterate it. Okay. Anybody got anything to feel brave enough to say out for us? Jim?
I'm always. I'm stunned at what's coming out of me this week. This has been great. I sprained my ankle, and so I've been doing a lot of...
Oh, yeah. You broke your finger, then you sprained your ankle.
That first day back from Canada, I felt the joy of an unwound spring of tension held not so far away that the sun and sight and crossing... of another land could gently expose my weak, unending, helpless mess of upside-down notions that could not stand exposure to a people not so different.
Yeah. That's one of the longest sentences I've written. I'd like to see the punctuation on that after class.
Just kidding.
I'll diagram it for you.
Oh, I had to learn those too. Gosh, that's a dark ages for me. Yeah, diagramming sentences. It's one of those things like slide rules. I learned how to use slide rules, and then, 5 years after college, they used calculators. I now have 3 or 4 good slide rules, so fairly obsolete. Anybody else? Please.
This is as crazy as your dog. That first day back from Canada, I saw her peek out the window when I pulled up in the car. Who was that? A face as pale and gossamer as the curtain itself. Did I get a new neighbor while I was gone? Where was David? Don't ask me.
I know not to ask you because... Now, would you have guessed in 20 years that you would have come up with that any time this year or this, you know?
Not ever, and I had a perfect picture of it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly, you do, and we're getting that, you know, that's communicated. And, you know, that's not to say you're necessarily done with it or you couldn't, you know, for our purposes as readers, do even more with it, et cetera. But, you know, that's a wealth, that's a little, I think of the processes of art, kind of like in graphic arts, where you've got some things that are just little quick sketches or thumbnail sketches, and then other things that are pretty much good drawings, and then other things that are, you know, pastels or paintings, and other things that are kind of big paintings, and other things that are kind of mosaics or wall murals. You know, they have a big intention and a big, you know, so on. And what seems to me to be happening in some of these is that there's a real density because I'm getting a little thumbnail sketch. It promises, you know, the Sistine Chapel ceiling, you know, but it's just condensed. Why? Because you only had 2 minutes, you know. And I think that's one of the secrets to unlocking, you know, and just letting that stuff spill out, is just make yourself do it fast. Please.
That first day back from Canada, the memory of the borderless border crossing sweetened my day. It's saying to me throughout many months, Canada, a sister country.
Bingo. Mm. Bingo. There's a wonderful poem that you would probably like. I think it is by William Stafford, and it has to do with there being no border. It's actually has a very large intent. It speaks in very plain terms about there not being a border, really. And I think he was in Banff or someplace when he supposed this poem. But actually, the thematics of the poem have to do with just peace in a very large sense. You know, that I mean, isn't this the largest unbroken, unguarded border in the world or something like that, you know? It's astounding, really. So I wish I could think what the title of that poem is, but well, read a lot of William Stafford, you'll probably come across. I feel sure it was his piece. Anyway, since you have some of those same sentiments, I'm just mentioning it. Anybody else? If you please.
That first day back from Canada, I remembered the bagpipes, the men in plaid skirts, Dingwall, Nova Scotia, the waves hitting the sandy beach on a foggy night, a foghorn, silence, fresh scallops, the last trip our dog took with us because he died.
Another wealth of information there, you know, that could be expanded, it could be added to. You know, lots of things could happen with something like that. Anybody else? Audrey?
The first day back from Canada, I was afraid. I'm not sure what of. Maybe the mail. Could it be the news of her death? Or the house with no door, no furniture, no children? What has happened to me on this trip? Will I be able to go back? How can I now, when I see that there are different ways to be, to act, to express? Open the door now.
I'm glad I didn't send you to France. You and she don't have to be neighbors, do you? I just wondered, this doorless house has kind of got me here. Yeah. I mean, in my imaginings of myself, or as little as I know Audrey, in my imaginings of Audrey, neither one of us would envision a house with no door.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, and then the person asks, well, okay, so why do that? You know? Well, it's a way of just unlocking and expressing and, you know, letting just... why I do art of any kind is to clarify. There is so much going on inside of us, I don't know where to point, but there's so much going on inside of us that any of us, none of us could be blamed for, you know, on the notion at any particular time of the day or night, you know. Let me give you an example. Sometimes I will have an emotional response to a situation that's one thing, and an intellectual response that's another thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's common. I don't think I'm an unusual guy in that way. If I've decided with someone that we're going to get together and spend an hour together in the evening, and I get a phone call and they say, can't make it this evening after all. Plumbing broke, house is flooded, we'll have to postpone. I'm feeling so goofy about it, I don't even want to guess when. Bye. Well, I have an emotional reaction to that. My intellectual reaction is, well, of course, you know. The gooseneck under the sink broke in the bathroom. There's water all over the place. I can understand that. You know, we can't see one another this evening. We're not going to have tea. You know, we're not going to sit on the front step, you know, and drink iced tea together. So that's one, you know, that's my head talking. And I let them off the hook and I say, well, you know, there's no reason to, you know, to be upset with that person or with myself or with anything. It's just that's how life is. But my emotional reaction is not one of acceptance. My emotional reaction is, I hate this. You know, I've been looking for this a month. I don't know when I'm going to have another eating free. I don't know when this person's going to have an eating free. Why did this have to happen now? Why couldn't it happen tomorrow night on her own time, on his own time? You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay? And so to reconcile those two parts of my personality, you know, I might write, or I might paint, or I might do something tactile. I might make a pot or something. And one of the things about writing is, well, any of them, is it gets us out, it gets it out in front of us. We can have a look at that and say, oh, well, you know, this is my head, this is my heart talking, this is my, you know, where I'm accepting it as a rational deal and so on. This is where I just hate it because I'm, you know, just wanting to be a little kid about it and say, and throw a fit and throw myself on the ground and, you know, feel sorry for myself, you know. So that's one of the main reasons for me to want and to know that I, not just to want, but to know that I require some kind of an expressive mode. Some kind of a mode that is expressive and that I want to try to get better at and to be artful with. Raw writing, raw painting, raw pottery is all fine. And then I also would like for it to become artful at some point. Now, a lot of what we've already heard is already starting to be artful, isn't it? I think so. What I mean by that, in the case of words, it's got images, it's got metaphors. Gosh, if we wanted to be an English teacher, it's got hidden meanings. Where did that door go, Audrey, and why isn't it there? why is there no furniture in the house? How long were you in Canada anyway? Somebody came in and packed off everything you had. So it already ignites as something rather artful, and then I want to allow it to become more artful. I want to let myself interchange with the material so that it speaks to me in a way that it has clarity, that it has some dignity, that it has a sense of purpose. I'm for art that has function. I'm saying to me, art is useful. If it's not useful, I don't have time for it. If it's just pretty, or if it's just beautiful, or if it's just lovely, or if it's just sentimental, or any number of other things. I could go on for an hour here. That's not art enough for me. It's got to be useful. Now, in this culture, we never really have had the notion too much that art is a useful, normal, natural part of life. But we're rare in that. There are whole cultures that have no word for art because they do it all the time anyway. They would never dream of making a spoon that just works. You know, they carve it out of wood and it just works and it is perfectly balanced, it's perfectly smooth, and it will outlast the user, you know, et cetera, et cetera, whether that's a spoon or a basket or a sandal or whatever. You know, and we could go into why that's happened in America and why we feel estranged from it, alienated from it, and so on. You know, I'd be happy to talk about that at any time, but I don't think we need to have me rattle on about it now. I'll just read you what I have here, you know, from the first day back from Canada, just because I'm trying to be honest and not be hiding my bad stuff. So, okay, that first day back from Canada, I missed the clamor of winging geese. Things wanted attending to. Unload the car. Start the paper. Baking soda out the Coleman cooler. Pick the cat up from the kennel. And then just before supper, I'd turned down the knobs and stepped outside and wadded them in the gray. Now, do I have an exceptional feeling about this as being high art? No. Do I have a feeling that it's unlocked something in me that some things in me that I'm getting a nice jolt from, you know, just having it out there? Yeah, you know. One of the things that I am in real sympathy with is just the natural world. I just like birds and bugs and bears and berries and the lawn. I mean, the smell of a new cut grass, you know, or going out, this is my favorite, going out and finding some kind of dog that's at least as hairy as, say, a Cocker Spaniel, which I don't guess they make anymore, but we used to have a lot of them. And when it's been lying out in the lawn in the sun and it's got that, and putting your face on it, you know, what a great feeling. Well, I'm in love with all that natural stuff in the world. Well, somehow this lets me get to some of that. Somehow some of my little finicky ways with dailiness and domesticity and just, you know, how I fuss about things, this seems to kind of, some of that's coming out in here. Would I have thought to, or would I have thought I needed to say that? No. But now that I see it, I realize, well, I'm kind of a little fuss budget about that kind of stuff. You know, be sure to get the Coleman out, you know, get that fish smell out of there, take the baking soda, open it up, hose it out, leave it open, you know, make sure you do these things, you know, and then try to go in and fix a supper, you know. And then it has this little fussy, this guy talking in this poem, which is pretty close to me, as this guy remembering to turn the knobs off before he steps outside. You know, that's me, you know. Oh yeah, okay, everything's going here fine, just turn off all the knobs, make sure you got all the knobs turned off, and then you can let yourself go outside for 2 minutes and stand on the porch, you know, and just look up and go, you know, I'm back from Canada and the Coleman's cleaned out and I picked the cat up and it's, you know, the cat's a nut now because it's been in a kennel and, you know, all that stuff. So it really does uncover a bunch of little pieces of me. Is it exactly me? No, not exactly me. It's kind of based on me. And there are certainly things I can identify myself in it. Is it expressive of who I am? Yeah. Is it art writing? Well, it's not art writing enough for me yet because it's not useful enough for me yet. Do I think it has promise? Well, I don't know. I think if I were to work on this a bit, you know, I think I should give this its best chance. I would say that. You know, I don't think I should abandon this yet. Now, when we're in that kind of feeling, I'll just presume to go ahead and just say this straight out because I've been at it so long. I think it's good to have a great big horizontal surface and a lot of little piles and stacks. What I mean by that is, maybe we've got our typewriter here or our computer or whatever we're doing, and we've got a little pile over here that's stuff that is pretty nearly done. You know, we've written it, we went back to it in a day or a week, did a little something else,
took out a line, we put back in that line. No, we took it out again, and we put it down four lines later, whatever. We've been working, so that's a little stack of stuff, maybe 30 pages or 10 or something. And it's kind of going okay. It's on simmer, you know. And then I got a little stack over here of stuff that's almost done. Maybe that's like five pieces or something, you know. Four one-page poems and one six-page poem, or an essay, something. And I got this little stack that's almost done. Then I got this stack over here that's just really hopeless, you know, but I won't give up on it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just different kinds of stacks. And I got some stacks that are just like one sentence. It's just a whole stack of pages that have one sentence or one seven-word phrase. Well, what does that mean when I go to my big writing surface then? You know, and if you don't have one of these, make your family give you one. You know, just the room that it takes to, you know, to have your own surface, and let's don't put the telephone book on it, and let's don't put the phone on it, and let's don't put the TV anywhere near it, et cetera, et cetera. And then when I go there, I can choose my stacks. I can look through this one and say, oh, okay, not bad. That's about maybe 60% done. I think I'll work on that. Or call it up on the screen. And I can work that a bit. And if I get tired of it, or it makes me sick, or I feel like today's not the day for that piece, thank you very much, I can ditch that and go over to one that's almost done. Let's see if I can finish this. You know, if that's not working, I can go over to those one sentence piles. That's a great pile to get into, you know. Well, what can I do with that sentence? Well, would this sentence down underneath here have anything to do with it? Well, that's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, you know. I'll put those two sentences down together and see. I'll put the second one first. And that makes me think of a third one when I see them that way, et cetera, et cetera. That means I've always got something to do. Okay? I think death to a person who's trying to, you know, art stuff out, or this certainly has been true for me and for many writers and painters that I know, is trying to make ourselves absolutely finish something, or we're not going to start something else. It's kind of like, to me, it's like a little punishment that we make for ourselves. I'm not going to start anything until I get this one right. And I've written more pieces that way, just absolutely written them into the ground, you know. Just written them. They're not just dead horses that I'm beating. I'm just beating bones, you know. It's just bone dust by the time I get finished with it, you know. There's nothing left. Was that ever a horse? I don't think so. Don't ask me. You know, I've done that to pieces. You can overwork them. You can, you know. And why would I want to do that when I've got so many options, you know? And if those options aren't appealing, look out the window. You know, we can always start by looking out the window, you know. I mean, there's material for us and in us and in our memory and in our recall. We started one last week with just the phrase, I remember. Wow, we got great stuff out of that. I think that's maybe where this one about the mom and pop grocery store came from. You know, it's just a quick recollection of that. And the wonderful thing about that is, that by now we've all got loads of memories. You know, when you're eight, you don't have a whole lot, you know, of memories. But some of them aren't quite painful or joyous or whatever. But I'm just saying, we've got a lot of material. But if we don't want to do that, we can always look out the window. A blue car drove by.
Oh, yeah.
It can start us. You know, it can get us started. You know. Why did my dad always buy black cars? My Uncle Ross always bought black cars. My granddad had a blue pickup truck. Was that a Studebaker? Was that a Dodge? I think it was an International. It was a Willys. Da 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 da. It's something. And if we just keep being faithful to it, we might pull up something rich and something that we need to have out there and something we need to address. I began one once, I remember, and it started this way. I remember the bedroom window shade. There was only the one. And the light slipping in below it in the early morning, a thin sideways sliver matching exactly the something under the door across the room. Now, that was when I was 4 years old. And I'll just kind of quickly flesh that out for you so I don't have to memorize the poem or dig it out of the bag or anything. But we had this little rule. I was the first guy, and we had this little rule. My father had to travel a lot when we were starting out. And being four, you don't know what day of the week it is, et cetera, et cetera. So the family rule was I had to stay in bed until I heard voices. Okay. Couldn't just hear somebody out in the kitchen because it might be mom fixing stuff for dad who was still asleep because he just came in off the road, da-da-da, you know. Just came in from business and wanted to sleep in, thank you very much. And also when you're four, you don't know what time it is, you know. And I still kind of wake up this way, but certainly when I was young, I woke up like, hit the ground running, you know. And I could make more damage in 12 minutes, you know, and did on many occasions. So they developed this rule. Well, I thought that the kitchen floor would look pretty good if you took a whole box of Wheaties and spread it about one Wheatie thick all over it. Pretty nice deal till you discovered, you know. And so that's what the rule was. So while I was there, this poem has to do with just sort of that way that you entertain yourself when you're a youngster and you don't want to be bored. And so you sort of, I would remember dreams. I would watch this little sliver of sunlight. I would plan the day, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to have breakfast, and I'm going to do so-and-so, and I have to put my jammies under the pillow, I have to pull my bed up, so on and so on, then I can go outside, I have to take out the trash, but then I can go outside and play, da-da-da-da-da. And the poem just ends with this little notion that by the time they let me get out of bed and I went through all the regime, it seemed to me that it was always raining. You know, when I woke up, there was sunlight under that thing, and I was, you know, raring to go. And it was like, now I'm outside! You know? Now, do I need to have remembered that? Do I need to have expressed that? I kind of think I do. You know? I kind of think I do need... I think I'm... I can let that settle. You know, not that it, you know, bent me out of shape and sent me to deep therapy for 19 years or anything. But it was just a little thing in my life. So that's what I mean when I say we just take the dailiness and the stuff that we just already are. We don't have to make up fancy people in order to be artists. We just already are artists. I don't use the word talent. I don't even know what it means. I try not to use words that I don't know what they mean, like the word coincidence, which I don't know what it means, so I can barely remember it anymore. I'm not saying that there is no such thing as talent, but I just think that if there is, we've all got it. I don't think the star shoots across the sky, you know, when Michelangelo's born. I just think we all have, what would I say, gifts then, or we all have gifts coupled with ability and need and the desire and the want to express ourselves, maybe just to ourselves. Or maybe it's, for our parents' 60th wedding anniversary, I don't know. So all of that stuff is by way of this kind of experimenting that we just did on paper and so on. Anything that I've said, things that you've heard other people say, I think we're all, just kind of roughly saying it's an okay thing to do. It can have function. It's probably more necessary to our spiritual life. And I hadn't even started on that one yet. I was just talking emotional and intellectual. But our spiritual life, our wholeness as a personality and so on. I think it's vitally important. I don't think it's anything that we can... It's not a take-it-or-leave-it deal in my mind. Art is not a take-it-or-leave-it deal. You know, sort of like, when we get around to it, we'll make art. I got to eat every day, or every couple of days anyway. Got to sleep sometimes. Got to art. You know, just fits right in there. It's not a take it or leave it deal. Now, do you have remarks, questions, comments? Yeah.
Just a question. Do you find that even after you've rewritten something and you own it, it's yours, that the... sounds strange. But like the first thing that you've done, it's like you can't throw that piece of paper away.
The first draft and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I save all that stuff.
Okay. Because I have a napkin. Somebody else had said that I wrote on the Pennsylvania Turnpike years ago. I mean, it's on the computer. I won't lose it. I can't throw that.
I know. No. Yeah, that artifact is important. And it's not... how I got started with it was that when I was early writing, say 13 years old or something, and then through high school until I left for college and so on, my mother saved everything. She would clean out my shirt pockets. They were napkins. They were the inside of matchbook covers. They were, you know, just anything, little slips of receipts from the dry cleaners where I worked after school. Blah, blah, blah. And she has got that, all that stuff, you know. And so somewhere along the line, I figured, well, if she's going to keep it, I better keep it, you know. So she's got her bunch of stuff, and then I've got my bunch of stuff, and it's all my old stuff. And no, I can't throw it away. I don't know why. Sentimentality or... somehow the artifact itself reminds me of the moment quite a bit.
That's